Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle issue 4037, part 2. More choice pickings from the live Bugle recorded at London's Underbelly Festival on the 13th of July. I am Andy Zaltzman, and I'm about to go on holiday, so if you have any important questions, information, requests, gifts, or ransom notes, or other correspondence for me, please send them to me, care of France, with a covering note explaining how to find me. I'll probably be face down in a bucket of mules. And don't forget to use an unnecessarily large number of words. It is the only language they understand. Actually, they are considerably more multilingual than us Brits, but it is definitely one of their best languages, alongside, of course, the language of love. But before we get cracking into the live show, it would not be an audio newspaper without a section going straight in the bin. This week's section in the bin, a feature on massively large, massively dead skeletons. The Natural History Museum in London has controversially sacked Dippy the Diplodocus as its star celebrity dead creature. The dino skeleton fired from being the main exhibit in the museum's entrance hall and replaced with Hope, a much less dead blue whale skeleton. Just Hope, that is. No other name. Brazilian footballer-style mononym for the 126-year-old novice there. Dippy was sacked for being just too dead at 152 million years and 7 months. And also allegedly for being pretend after shocking tabloid revelations that he was in fact historically provable to be a fake dinosaur. A replica, in fact, of an American dinosaur. It's like Destiny's Child and Mystique all over again for the younger Bugle listeners amongst you. Dippy is not taking it lying down, though. He's set to tour Britain early next year with a warts and all show around the same time as I'll be touring Britain, coincidentally, so we'll probably bump into each other at around 1:30 a.m. in a motorway service station to bitch about the industry at some point. Rumours are that Dippy was fired after trying to get it on with a replica Stegosaurus. These have been denied by the Natural History Museum, who say the decision was based purely on form. The museum boss, Mike Bones Dixon, explained he's just not been quite as natural or historical as this natural history franchise wants its star exhibits to be. But the signing of Hope has not met with universal approval. The British Association for the Rights of Krill, BARC, is protesting the installation, saying the Natural History Museum is normalising the slaughter of millions of krills every day who are the victims of Hope's living relatives. But Dixon insists that Hope will appeal more to today's kids. He said today's children with their iPads and shit like that are much more likely to relate to something that's only been dead for 126 years rather than the doddery old 152 million year dead dino codger. There are also hopes that Hope, who was a lady whale, not a dude whale, technical terms those, will be a female role model for the modern age, despite being paid considerably less than Dippy was paid. But you have to ask, is she a positive role model in terms of body image? Is she going to make other blue whales think that she is some kind of idealised norm to which they should be aspiring? And do we not also want active female role models? A blue whale out there getting stuff done, whaling it about, being independent, not just standing there pointlessly doing nothing of use, being stared at and photographed and judged on her body. Do we really need another Princess Marilyn Monroe of Troy? That section in the bin. Also in the bin, this plug for my forthcoming Edinburgh Festival shows. There are live Bugles on the 16th and 27th of August. A Political Animal runs from the 15th to the 17th and the 22nd to the 24th. And above all, it's the return of Satirist for Hire, new and improved, hopefully, at the Stand from the 15th to the 27th of August at 3 p.m. Do send in your satirical requests as soon as humanly possible to satirise this at satiristforhire.com. Advance requests will receive writing precedence. And if nothing else, it will give me something else to read in the Satirist Fire inbox that is not telling me how much larger my scrumple blatch could be. All topics in this crazy world we live in will be satirised to order. Show may also feature the brain of Donald Trump and a large magic teapot. Anyway, that section is in the bin, but do please feel free to fish it out of the bin and take a closer audio look at it before deciding to buy tickets and send me a request for the show. Thanks. Right, let's get back to the live Bugle from last week, and we'll pick up the action now with your host, Andy Zaltzman, and alongside him, Helen Zaltzman and Nish Kumar.
You can have children, but to, if you want to cut their carbon footprint down, you need to then dump them in a UN airdrop into a Sudanese refugee camp. Because the facts show that people in the developing world give off a fraction of the CO2 emissions compared with people in major industrialised nations. So that's what I'll be doing with my children next week. you can change your transport habits. Do you know the most environmentally friendly form of transport, anyone? Sorry? Swimming?
No. That's after the world floods.
Been hanging out with Kevin Costner. It is.
Yes, nice, that was a Waterworld joke. What of it?
Yep.
What of it?
That is one of the up-to-date reference there.
That is one of the most up-to-date cultural references in Bugle history. That is from less than 30 years ago. I'll do a Bananarama gag later if you could.
Why don't you swim like Esther Williams? That's another up-to-date cultural reference, Andy.
Is it? Did she win the Olympics?
Wartime swimming sweetheart.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Second World War.
Right, okay.
Not Crimean.
What?
Don't go back to the Crimean War. He's going to talk about Nightingale now.
Oh, lordy. Actually, scientifically, the most environmentally friendly form of transport is the motorcycle pyramid. Because and you don't have to pay congestion charge if you're. It's even better than the donkey, which of course Jesus championed as an early green activist. That's a fact. You could become more apathetic about politics because do you know burning effigies is responsible for 90% of the Antarctic falling to pieces. That's a fact. Or at least only burn effigies of environmentally friendly politicians because they ironically give off less CO2 than effigies of politicians in the pockets of the oil industry. Or start a gangland war in your local neighbourhood. This is excellent for the environment because your reign of terror on the streets will make local people wary of leaving their homes, cutting down significantly on unnecessary short car journeys. The collapse in the local economy will also mean there are fewer businesses in the local area too, and people will be forced to live an eco-friendly, self-sufficient existence. So we can build a better world, people. The mafia were way ahead of the game. Testify.
It is going to be a tricky sell, though, because the study found, it was done by Lund University in Sweden, and it found that eating a plant-based diet, avoiding air travel, living car-free and having smaller families is going to help. And that is going to be tricky because it basically boils down to no meat, no holidays, no cars and less f***ing. And I think when presented with those options, I suspect 90% of the world's population will react by saying, well, we had a good run.
You wanted to talk about Donald Trump. You're a massive fan, aren't you?
I wouldn't necessarily put it that way, Andy. But in the interest of bullshit, fine. Donald Trump has an imaginary friend named Jim.
That is a glorious sentence to hear.
I'm pretty happy for him because for a long time there have just been constant articles going, Donald Trump has zero friends. He used to go to Studio 54 on his own and not drink anything and not do drugs and not have sex with anyone. He has no friends, but now he has Jim. And he talks about Jim quite a lot. Usually he says, every year Jim goes to Paris with his wife every summer. They love Paris. Not anymore, because it's full of insurgents. Yeah, Jim, you see. They can't work out whether Jim is real. They have no surname for Jim, no visual. They only have Trump evidence for Jim. So I think we can assume Jim is just the avatar for fear.
Right. Has anyone asked that in a press conference at the White House? Well, is Jim the avatar for fear?
Do you think he would understand those words?
No, it would sound like he was calling in a nuclear strike, I think.
But Donald Trump is in Paris right now, and he'll be there for Bastille Day when foreign people are setting fire to explosive things. So how's he going to take that? That's going to look like French people and fireworks, because it's Bastille Day.
Right. Well, I sure hope he doesn't come here on November the 5th, otherwise all bets are off, frankly, aren't they? Yeah.
I think the telltale thing with Jim and the way that you know it's bullshit is in the conversation that he has. He says, I said to Jim, how's Paris doing? And you're like, no one would ever speak like that.
What, as if Paris was human?
Unless he's right. Yeah. So unless the whole conversation was actually about Paris Hilton, and she is now absolutely occupied by ISIS. That is a world exclusive from Donald Trump and his friend Jim.
I guess how's Paris doing could come from the very informal first draft of Homer's Iliad. There's a little joke for any Iliad, and that is why I don't play the club circuit.
But who'd have thought your degree in classics would ever be useful?
Worth every penny of the then government's money. On the subject of global population, obviously immortality would be a bit of an issue for it. But, I mean, there's no getting around that unfortunate fact. Probably the last thing the world needed right now is more people becoming immortal. But that is essentially what the Pope is trying to create, more immortal saints.
Yeah, well, saints tend to be...
There you go, that is the Pope in his cricket kit, taking guard. Just not asking for a middle and leg guard there for any cricket fans out there with his two fingers. They were maybe saying it was like two balls to the over left, or anyway. But, yeah. What? Why are you looking at me like that? I've seen that look so many times in the last 37 years.
I was expecting a full 5-day commentary to come out of your mouth.
That's the video extras. He's come up with a new way of becoming a saint.
Yes, this could be good news for you, Andy.
I'm on tenterhooks because I'm failing on the other. This is the fourth way. I'm 0 for 3 at the moment, I think.
Yeah. So hitherto, to get considered to be a saint, you had to have been a martyr.
Ooh.
It's a painful way to get sainthood. You had to live a life of heroic values or have a clear saintly reputation and also have done miracles. Now, this is the new way. You must have freely and voluntarily offered your life in the face of certain and soon death to save somebody else.
Oh, right. I think, actually, we've done something... In fact, Nish and I pretty much did that at the Andover Light and that gig we did together. But I think he basically went up and took the enemy fire for me.
Yeah, I took the enemy fire, but then it turned out the enemy had more bullets, and so they just shot you as well.
Well, have either of you performed miracles?
Well, if by miracle you define that as awful comedy, then yes, Helen, yes, we did.
You qualify. That's exciting. Andy?
Well, an actual miracle. No, I make a pretty good carbonara, but I don't know if that's... when it's recently reviewed by Jewish Food Monthly as so good it's kosher. Well, I don't know, does that count? Have you ever done a miracle? It's all thrown it at us. Well, when are you going to become a saint? When are you going to settle down and get a proper job and become a saint?
How big was that shit, Helen?
I was not sentient, but I'd imagine...
Nor was anyone else by the end of it.
You're welcome. I made you that doll of Tony Benn. That was pretty miraculous.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but then he died.
What you did with it was up to you. Didn't come with instructions.
You didn't tell me it was that kind of doll. I mean, he did die. It was quite a few years later, but anyway. You also made me one of Donald Rumsfeld, so maybe I'll give that one a go. That's just the kind of family we have. She makes dolls of leading politicians.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want to play with an effigy of an old man in a grey suit? Kids.
That's why she's won Auntie of the Year 6 years in a row.
Is this Jewish voodoo? Is this judo?
We usually just do that on Oceans. Anyway. fancy a trundle. Now, there was another scientific report came out that said that coffee can basically make you live forever. That's the way I interpreted it. What the report actually said was coffee might or might not make you live slightly longer. But I'm prepared to take that on board and drink as much coffee as possible. Because I have a problem with sleeping patterns. And yet another scientific report has blamed our distant ancestors for people having bad sleeping patterns. This is going out as a recorded show as well, Helen. So you doing a visual gag for the people in the room is really absolutely no use to anyone apart from the people in this room.
But people might just interpret it as general enjoyment of your words.
Right.
Stop complaining.
apparently, the reason some humans today have bad sleeping patterns, according to scientists, is... do not trust science. It is witchcraft in a lab coat. The reason is because some of our distant ancestors in the early days of human life, they always had to keep someone awake through the night when they live in their early communities to keep an eye out for things like dinosaurs, asteroids, once bitten, twice shy. Well, ironically, one did solve the other. But anyway, dinosaurs, asteroids, Randy Zeus, that was always a big thing you really had to keep an eye out. So he moved.
That's another one of your wrestling names, isn't it, Zoss?
A vengeful Thor.
and they just keep coming.
cave-to-cave mammoth insurance salesman, that kind of shit. You had to keep awake. You had to keep awake, and that is why today I suffer. My sleeping patterns were basically designed by Jackson Pollock. That is...
Isn't it because they televise a lot of sport from other time zones? And if you don't watch it, who will? Chalk that up to your saint application.
That could be, although it does... I'll share something from the early life of my children. Both my children were born in the winter. And during the winter, there are such things as test matches in Australia and the Australian Open tennis. And for any imminent parents, I can heartily recommend having those as an option for volunteering to look after the baby during the night. Don't worry. I will selflessly take charge of this crying baby for the next 7 hours with a 40-minute break in 2 hours' time and a further 20-minute break 2 hours after that. So, this same study on sleeping patterns came to the conclusion that John Bon Jovi's philosophical maxim, I'll live when I'm alive and sleep when I'm dead, well, that has now been studied. And... the author of the report, Professor Freya Greenstein Finkelblatt Jr. from the Chicago Institute of Snoozing, found that, and I quote, Mr. Jovi's assumant of sleep will result in a largely unfulfilled, unexciting life in which he is too tired to indulge in the rock and roll hell-raising wherewith he apparently aspires. Moreover, the renowned singer of the hit song but poor dietary advice, Living on a Prayer, will find himself disappointed by the absolute and unremitting nothingness of death. Sleep, by its nature, being an active restorative process, not with mentioning the possibility of dream, a gift or curse bestowed not upon the corpse. Hence, we do not sleep in refrigerators. Mr. Jovi would therefore be medico-psychologically advised to both live and sleep whilst he is alive and listen to some of his later works whilst he's dead. His early work, concludes the report, stands up pretty well.
55 minutes, Andy.
Oh, 55. Right, okay.
I'm here for the fun tonight.
Right.
Every so often, Chris is like, I cannot believe I'm still doing this f***ing shit.
Little Chrissy clock in the corner is piped up. So, right, we should move on. We had quite a lot to get through, but we're running out of time. Helen, you have some. Do you want to bang on about umbrellas for a bit, or?
I don't know. I don't know how pressing it is. What have you got?
I've got something on.
I can see the words bobsled origin on your screen.
Yep. Well.
How do you need us to
know,
tee that up?
I don't know how to break the news that I'm moving into prog rock,
So it's almost a name worthy of having a third child for, Andy.
What was the? That's the origin of bobsled. Because you took. Well, let's do this about the this Chinese umbrella sharing company. Now, in last week's Bugle, talked about a Chinese bike sharing company that had lost 90% of its bikes. Now, there's this.
That's
week,
not good sharing, is it?
It's not. Arguably, it might be too good. I don't know. A Chinese umbrella sharing company has now gone brolly up after similarly. Similarly. Don't worry. There's more to come. So they just explain the story.
Ellie. Right. So this is a Chinese startup called Sharing E Umbrella. And it opened in April with 300,000 umbrellas left around the town, like 11 cities in China. And it costs about £2.20 to hire an umbrella, and then you pay 6 pence per 30 minutes. Each umbrella costs £6.85. So what they found is people are not bringing the umbrellas back because it's getting an umbrella at a heavy discount. So they have lost nearly all 3,000 umbrellas. So maybe they just should have gone for an honours system rather than just even pretending it was a hire scheme. But apparently, undeterred, there are 3 more Chinese umbrella-sharing startups entering the space.
Really?
Yeah.
And the wonders of human ingenuity.
And the founder plans to put 30 million more umbrellas in circulation by the end of the year. He is undeterred. He says, anything that you can have on the streets, you can share. Which works for bikes and cars, big things that you might not want to own and are difficult to store.
Bins.
Sharing a bin, fine. You don't like sharing bins, historically. That's a deep Bugle cut. But umbrellas, not such a difficult thing to possess permanently.
Right.
Good luck to
you. But, I mean, people try to share everything in this sharing economy.
Well, it's a communist country.
These days.
That arguably is taking communism one step too far. I think even Karl Marx would be like, come on, lads.
They have a basketball sharing scheme now.
Do they really?
Yeah.
What? How does that...
Well, otherwise,
it's
just
the
playing
NBA,
on your own.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I see.
So bobsled origin.
Yeah, it's the origin of bobsled. Was a sharing sharing economy thing.
Oh, God.
Get out.
Where are we going?
No,
Christ.
That's not
get
it.
Out
get
now.
No, it's not it.
Don't
it,
jump in the back of this.
It's coming later.
It's like that sinking feeling when you've realised you've left your house without your keys. Like, that's the...
Because the bobsled as a sport, it's just a man that jumps in a sled and then 3 people get in behind him and do nothing. That's clearly they've just catched... It began as people catching a lift in a bobsled. That's a fact. Did anyone have any pressing question? We'll do a quick, maybe take 2 questions. Ooh. Chris going to go out in the...
One hand went straight up.
Can you guys please pass this along?
Chris, don't trust these people. I'm actually quite impressed that 4 people managed to pass that microphone along without one of them shouting, F*** you, Chris, into it.
F*** you, Chris. Oh,
straight in.
Any idea what happened on Love Island tonight?
Love Island? What, you mean Britain? In this new age of post-Brexit utopia where we all learn to live together.
On Love Island, a stat I didn't get to earlier on is that 113 people in this room have had sex in a car.
At the same time? What? In the same car?
It must have been a coach. Surely, at least.
I haven't seen Love Island, but I can tell you what happened tonight. Some twats had sex.
Really demystified that.
any other questions?
There's a man who I believe...
This person are really enthusiastic.
Yeah, I believe this man is currently wearing an Andy Zaltzman T-shirt that he concerningly appears to have fashioned himself. So, exciting times for us in the Bugle. We could be about to witness Andy's Mark Chapman moment.
Do you think Dwayne The Rock Johnson has any decent chance of winning the 2020 US presidency?
Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
You know, Rock is running for Senate in Michigan now, so it's a big week for rock-named celebrities going into politics.
Excellent.
He's got hats and everything, so it's official.
Right. Kid Rock running for...
Senate.
Right.
In Michigan.
Cool. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, you're our, the Bugle's wrestling correspondent, Helen.
Great.
So perhaps you'd have a greater insight on this than I do. I think this is probably the future for... I mean, to be honest now, American politics has become more infantile, less believable than American wrestling. So...
Yeah.
Let's put this to the public vote. As I said, Americans shouldn't be allowed to vote in American elections, so we'll do this on behalf of the rest of the world. Who here would like to keep Donald Trump as president? Hands up. There's just one hand going up there at the front, and is that just for entertainment purposes? Yes, oh, just for pure entertainment. Who here would rather see Trump replaced with, I'm going to need a...
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Not Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Let's go for another wrestler.
Another one. Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Stone Cold Steve Austin. Okay, let's go. Stone Cold Steve Austin, of course, very big opponent of global warming. so maybe that'll be a big step forward.
I am forgiving you every single pun in that pun run for that one Stone Cold Steve Austin global warming ad lib. That is absolutely phenomenal work. Extraordinary.
One final. So yeah, wrestling is the political future for America. We'll have one final question, Chris.
The man in the Zoltzman t-shirt. Oh no,
where
Chris
is he? Where is Zoltz t-shirt?
He's right there. Okay, right there in the middle.
Oh God, he has actually got my face.
He has,
on the
yeah.
Shirt.
Please pass along.
Also, that is not regulation merch. He has made
no,
that himself.
That is, he has stolen that from my children. that was an addition of two.
Andy, well, I was just wondering, which of your current co-hosts do you think will be next to voice a Smurf?
Oh.
Ooh.
It's got to
be
Anubhav
Pal. Surely it's time for an Indian Smurf.
I don't know, what would the Indian Smurf...
I'm not going to do the accent, Andrew.
I wonder what qualities it would bring.
I saw the look in your eyes. I anticipated the next request, and I headed it off at the pass. I don't know who. What do you think? I think you'd be quite.
Me?
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. I haven't.
I think you'd be quite like. I think
yeah,
you'd be quite sort of like.
It's what the franchise needs. Can imagine that in Happy Meals.
Pedantic Smurf. Verbose Smurf.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with the plots of the Smurf films, so I don't know what happens and what would be required of the role.
Neither am I.
John Oliver, to be honest. He just read the words on the page.
Most of my Smurf knowledge has come from over the years listening to Andy berate John for his participation in it. So I'm not fully up. I mean, I assume one of the Smurfs does a 25-minute long monologue about the oil industry halfway through. Halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
Well, this is incredibly funny and well-researched, but it's very atonal with the rest of the film.
Smurfs did really kill John's career, didn't they? See, he only got one Emmy nomination this week.
Quick bit of sport now. And as we record, which is, let me
it's
just check my watch today, a British woman has played in the semi-final of Wimbledon for the first time since Virginia Wade in 1978. Wade, of course, lost that year, losing the title she'd won in... Hang on, let's get my calculator out. 1978 minus one. So 1877. Do you take one off both bits? Of it? I don't know. Anyway.
You carry it. Anyway, I think you carry it.
Carry it over.
There's a remainder.
Right, I get confused by maths. Anyway, Wade lost in 1978, sparking a national despond, which triggered the victory of Margaret Thatcher in the 1979... general election, a hammer blow to British womanhood that clearly stopped any British woman reaching a women's semi-final until this year. But finally, some 26 and three-quarter years after Thatcher was ousted from office...
On the day you got another sports injury, you broke your collarbone playing rugby at school. As our father told everyone, falling over a stile on the way to play rugby.
No, that's not true. No. No, let me put this in proper sporting context. I broke my collarbone in a game of four-a-side rugby in a practice for the school 9th-15 match to which only eight people turned up. That is the level of elite athlete you are looking at.
Yeah, but you're quite accustomed to performing in front of an audience the same size as the number of people on stage. So just prepping you for that.
This is good stuff. Now for Nish's final thought. Guys, sometimes with siblings, conflict is inevitable.
Anyway, the point is, Joanna Konta losing basically means at least 18 more years of Tory rule. But we will report back definitively on that in the year 2056. So, but Wimbledon, of course. Have you got any tennis fans in? Been a big problem with Wimbledon this year is all the injuries. Andy Murray went out yesterday with an injured hip. Novak Djokovic injured his arm. A spate of withdrawals in the first week. Australia's Nick Kyrgios, even so injured that he pulled out before he'd given himself time to throw a proper full tantrum. That's how injured he was. A few other injuries you might not have heard of. Trepel Plech of Canada pulled out of his second round match against Groovehard Mendip Hills of Australia. After serving a ball into his own into his own mouth. Hawkeye
showed
the ball.
Should we just all leave while you
can
carry on?
You can. This is basically now an exit track. Hawkeye showed the ball.
No, it'd be interesting because my parents are here and they were actually at Wimbledon today, so they'll be able to verify whether any of this information is. Well, this is that you'll be able to verify that, right, Mum
and
Dad?
No, I said, Nish, pay attention to the detail of the bullshit. This is a second round match. This lie happened last Wednesday or Thursday. I don't know.
I do apologise, Andrew.
Thank you.
It's not fresh bullshit.
Anyway, Hawkeye showed the ball clipped his tonsils on the way into embedding itself in his esophagus, so he was ruled out. Jerky Slinkoff of Belarus had to retire deep into an exhausting fifth set on a hot day against the Argentinian baseliner Juan Mango Flork. That after hallucinating that he was the king of Spain in the heat and trying to climb into the royal box, where he copped an umbrella in the plums from a panicking Duchess of Kent. Romania's Tomas to the rescue, retired. There's one for any tank engine fans out there. Retired when 6-2, 6-3, 5-lap up against Father Gillick McNuke of the Vatican City. After McNuke held up his crucifix and served a large head of garlic at to the rescue, who transpired to be an undiagnosed vampire and fled the court in panic. Father McNuke at the press conference afterwards said, "You never know with Eastern European players." I saw the same thing happen when Pat Cash beat Ivan Lendl in the 1987 final. He goes on to meet Poland's Wojciech Szczepanowski in the third round. Do you know when Pat Cash climbed up famously climbed up? You might have seen it on the TV this week. They showed 30 years since he climbed up to the box after winning. It wasn't actually to thank his coach and family. It was to get a mallet and some steaks to finish the level off. That's fact. McNuke, incidentally, the first Vatican player in the main draw at Wimbledon since Pope Pius XI, lost in the first round of the ladies' singles in 1925 to eventual champion Suzanne Longlon. Controversial on many levels, of course, but did eventually lead to the change in Wimbledon rules, which did at the time state that if you turn up in a dress, you have to play in the ladies' competition. And injuries not as bad on the ladies' side of the draw this year, though. There were some withdrawals. Blanche Bingley-Hilliard, she withdrew on the morning of her scheduled first rounder against Peculiarity Mendez-Clink of the USA. Bingley-Hilliard sadly died in 1946, but was invited as a wild card to mark the 120th anniversary of her fourth women's singles title in 1897. So
going back to which of us deserves to live.
All right. Oh, she's come out with a callback! She's bringing the good stuff. Right. You can catch all the highlights on today at Wimbledon. It's all there in Claire Balding's eyes.
And in tribute to Pat Cash, all three of us are going to celebrate tonight's Bugle by climbing through the audience.
To give our parents a cuddle. Yeah.
We're not going to do that. There was genuine panic in the front three rows there. We are not. That was a joke.
Genuine panic in our parents' eyes as well. We are British. Let's keep things above board.
Yes, all of that checks out. Right, I'm off on holiday now, so there will not be full Bugles for the next couple of weeks. But there will, however, be some absolute rock-solid gold from the recent and more distant archives to keep you entertained. Then we will be back fully on the Bugle Bouncy Castle in August, assuming there is still some news in the world knocking around that needs to be bugled. For now, though, that's it. I'm out of here.